That was music of Vivaldi. We heard the last movement of Autumn from the Four Seasons, and that was Anakiko Myers performing with the English Chamber Orchestra, David Lockington conducting. That music, all of Autumn, will be on the program on the Sunday after Thanksgiving, a concert with the Vox Valles Women's Ensemble, one of our newest classical ensembles here in Las Cruces. And I'm pleased to welcome back into our studios one of the founding members, Jesse O'Hara, and Krista Fredrickson, who will be a soloist at that concert, which is November 25th at 3 o'clock at the Good Samaritan Auditorium.
Yeah, Buena Vida Circle.
A post-Thanksgiving way to enjoy the fall and enjoy some beautiful music. So the concert, it's all Italian, Vivaldi, Corelli, and Respighi, and I want to talk about that in a little bit because we so associate the Italian composers with the Baroque era. But Ottorino Respighi, a 20th century composer, and a beautiful work that you'll be performing. Let's just talk about Autumn for a minute, though, because another link with the pieces that you're playing, at least with the Respighi, is poetry. Many people don't realize that the Four Seasons are all based on poems, and that last movement, it's rather sad for for music that otherwise, when you just hear the music, just feels glorious, and you can see all the autumn colors, and it's a hunting scene, and just a beautiful countryside. But actually, the last lines of the sonnet, Autumn, on which Vivaldi based that music, is a hunting scene, and then terrified and exhausted by the great clamor of guns and dogs, wounded and afraid, the prey tries to flee, but is caught and dies. That's what we just heard.
And then the hunters celebrate a successful outing, I suppose.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah. They go back and have their meal.
Yes.
So that's Jesse O'Hara. Tell us how you came to choose this program. Ana Maria Quintero will be the soloist, and you've got some new musicians coming in with Vox Valles this concert.
Yes. Well, we definitely wanted to do some of Vivaldi's Four Seasons. They're well known. They're really, really wonderful pieces to present. And since our lovely city doesn't have much of a fall, we thought what better way to create one than musically. So Ana Maria really, really loves the piece, and she's done it before. So she's going to be our soloist, as you said. We also have Amalia Zeitlin is going to be playing the Vivaldi with us. The same quartet that we had before with Elizabeth Green and Aaron Isles Espinosa. And then for the Corelli, for the other pieces, as well as for the Vivaldi, we have a harpsichordist, Papillon Wu, who she's just been a joy to work with. I think keyboardists sometimes don't get to play with other people as often as they would like, and it's really, really wonderful to actually work with her on this. Especially because there are so many solo parts within the Vivaldi and the Corelli, actually, that are very communicative. The Aaron's part, the principal cello, and my part, the principal violin, and Ana Maria's part, and the harpsichord always are functioning together in a very communicative style. We have expanded quite a lot. For the Corelli, we also have Caitlin Scott, who is a graduate of New Mexico State University and a music teacher in town. And our second cellist is a Chilean student she's gone to great strains to be here, actually. And her name is Pamela Alcheyenyin. And she's really excellent. So we feel really lucky to be working with so many amazing women this time.
So in addition to Autumn from the Four Seasons of Vivaldi, it's a Concerto Grosso of Corelli. And those are just all of the Concerti Grossi of Corelli. Just gorgeous, gorgeous music. Intricate, complicated Baroque music that's in the sense that there's a lot going on in those passages. But when I first interviewed you a couple months ago before the very first concert of Vox Valles, you said that you would always include vocal music. This was part of the purpose of Vox Valles, is to give voice to women musicians and parts. And so, Krista Fredrickson, want to welcome you into the studios again. You're going to be the soloist in a piece by a 20th century Italian composer, Ottorino Respighi, who's an interesting composer. We could talk about him for a whole interview because some of his most famous works are actually his ancient airs and dances, which sound very Baroque or even earlier.
Yes.
But Il Tramonto is a gorgeous long poem and fairly ambitious vocal work for you all to be putting on.
Yes, very ambitious.
Tell me your thoughts about Il Tramonto.
Il Tramonto is a piece that I discovered a few years back when I was really looking into works for mezzo-soprano, because I am a mezzo, and there's millions of things for soprano, but not as many for mezzo. And Respighi was thought to have loved mezzo-sopranos. He had a dear friend who was a mezzo that he worked with, and he wrote specifically for. And he kind of just developed a love affair with this voice over about 28 years in his career. And so he set several of Shelley's poems to cantatas, but this is probably his most famous one. And I wouldn't call this work famous. It's not well known, but of the Respighi cantatas, it's one of the most well known. What I love about it is Respighi in general, he draws from so many eras. As you said before, he draws so much from the Baroque era in his music, and he pulls from everything. He's not one to be true to his era. So in this piece, you hear elements of Wagnerian chromaticism and you hear French impressionism in it, but then there's very operatic Puccini-like lines. So it's a joy to sing because it feels like you're singing a little bit of everything. And it is as if he creates other characters with the strings. So even though it's a solo work, it feels very operatic in style because, especially with the way it's voiced with lots of syncopation and this underlying hemiola almost throughout the entirety of the work.
Tell us what a hemiola is.
A hemiola is a 2-against-3 feel in the music. So there's often times when I'm singing triplets, but the strings are actually in 4-4, and it's even scored where I'm singing a whole section of 12-8 while they're playing in 4-4 underneath me. And that just creates this agitation. You feel this sense of the lover's turmoil within that, and it really creates the characters.
All right, let's talk about the lovers. This is a very sad, long poem, and it takes, 12 or 14 or 15 minutes to sing
yes,
the whole piece.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit of what happens in this poem.
Well, it's about lovers, and basically the man dies young, and then the woman is spending her life trying to cope with the loss of this love, and then she eventually just allows herself to die in sadness as well. So it's very romantic in its idealism.
He dies in his, they wake up and he's dead.
Yes.
So he dies in his sleep somehow or mysterious.
It is originally an English poem. And
By Shelley,
mm-hmm. Yes. And then it was translated for Respighi, and that translation into the Italian just gives it so much more of that romantic feel. The way he sets the text, the Italian text, it really feels a little bit like death when you're singing it. It's a wonderful experience. It's hard for me not to jump for joy when singing it because it's so sad, but I enjoy singing this so much.
Is this your first time performing Il Tramonto?
No, actually, Jesse and I have performed this together quite a few years ago. I believe it was in 2013.
I think so.
for my senior recital, which was a big work for me to tackle so early in my singing career. I'm very excited to be revisiting it now. We actually discussed in rehearsal recently how coming back to a piece that was so difficult, which we didn't even attempt to rehearse it without a teacher present, either my voice teacher or her
violin teacher.
Right,
it was quite an undertaking then.
And now we're able to bring so much more to it in the way of artistry just because we've matured as artists together. So I'm happy to be revisiting it with her specifically.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what happens as musicians. You're going to keep rediscovering this work and moments in it for your whole career. So because that's what we do. You just keep learning and adding to your life. Is there something about it in particular that struck you now that you didn't understand when you first performed it 5 years ago?
Well, honestly, when Jesse first came to me and said, we're going to start this woman's ensemble, and I think I've told you before, I had already been looking to do the Pergolesi Stabat Mater, and I was looking for a way to do that. I was going to be talking with the university because it was something I wanted to perform, and at the exact same time, they were trying to do that. So it just felt
which is what you performed at the opening concert.
Performed. Mm-hmm. And that just felt so much like fate that we were both kind of searching for a way to do these works in this way. And so when Jesse said, you know, this isn't a one-time thing, we want to make this an ensemble, we just kind of looked at each other and we're like, we have to do Il Tramonto again immediately. And while I'm discovering new things about it and mostly discovering how excited I am at that I've grown as a musician and it's a little bit easier this time, I think when I put on a recording of it, as we were preparing to visit it again, it hooks you in the first pickup. I mean, mm-hmm. the anacrusis into the first measure, you're hooked immediately into it. And so I felt that again. I hadn't listened to it in years. And then I just felt so ready to tackle it. So there's a lot of nostalgia going into it, as well as just being able to understand musically a little bit more what's going on and enjoy it rather than sort of panic as those passages right. come up.
I think that, you know, for the strings, the operatic nature of this sort of quintet writing, because the voice really is folded so beautifully into the writing of the strings in this, it makes it really special for us. It will be the first time that we'll be playing a romantic work with this ensemble. But the connections, and in programming this, I think something that I started to realize about all three of these pieces is that despite the several centuries between them, there's this thread of the idea of suspension and hemiola and communication that actually is really, really clearly laid out in each piece, especially the Corelli and the Respighi. They both make use of a lot of that idea of suspension, of a lack of resolution, of a sense of tension and strain, which is kind of in contrast to some of the wonderful things that happen in the Vivaldi, which is kind of, you know, a breathing piece, a moving piece. And I think that it's a really well-balanced program to play. It's a really nice, it's nice to be able to use more vibrato
yes.
for a piece to kind of really play out. And that'll be an interesting thing for this ensemble. It has been an interesting thing for this ensemble to experience really finding a full sound and a different sound. And then how we can start to connect all three pieces stylistically, using some more 20th century kind of theatrical concepts in the Vivaldi, especially, actually, some of the ways that we want to try to bring out the moments of the sonnet, the characters and the movement, I think are going to help connect all three of those works really well.
I do agree. I think that our connection to the character of the piece is really at the forefront of this concert, and treating every instrument as a character, like Jesse said, with the Vivaldi and the fun plans that they have for that, as well as in the Respighi, there are many times when the vocalist melodically takes a backseat to the strings, and it almost feels as if she's an inner voice rather than the leading motive, because the feel, that's where the Wagnerian comes in. It's very much like a leitmotiv, and where she's singing something, but the real passion of what's going on isn't happening in the text, it's happening underneath.
Huh. Interesting. So you mentioned something, Jesse, about using more vibrato. So listeners may not realize, or some, that yes, if you're playing Baroque music, you use less vibrato and the different bow strokes,
yes,
because that was the style of that time. And then when you go into a more romantic or post-romantic or sort of romantic 20th century like Respighi, you can just cut loose with that more
yes.
expressive sound. because of the stylistic difference.
Certainly you can start, you know, quite the ideological battle about whether it's even appropriate to try to play Baroque music in a Baroque style on modern instruments. But the approach that we have tried to take with everything is to pay respect to the intention of the composer while maintaining a sense of being in 2018 and playing mm-hmm. to the audience we're listening to now. So we try to bring some of those stylistic aspects of color in the right way.
Those arguments were very alive when I was a young adult, less so now, because mm-hmm. I think people recognize Vivaldi was not just writing for his time.
Of course.
Or Bach or Beethoven. They all hoped their music would be played centuries down the road and now are. And I don't think they would ever have wanted it to stay fixed mm-hmm. in that moment. Music evolves, instruments evolve, our understanding of the music evolves because of the centuries that have passed. It's okay. But that said, you don't want to play Vivaldi in a totally romantic style. That just doesn't work.
It does. It's actually, in some cases, harder to do. I mean, it wasn't written. Vivaldi and Corelli particularly tend to be very idiomatically written. They were both very, very skilled violinists themselves.
Yes, they were.
So the works lay well in the hands. But that said, it lays better if you play it a little closely to the style in which it was intended to be played.
I think the most important thing when choosing to make decisions like that in the music is, A, are we advocating for the composer? And I believe that the stylistic choices that we're making this concert are certainly advocating for the composer, as well as making sure they're a choice. But by doing things like this, by making more theatrical choices or programming things that are written so far apart, you're able to generate a new audience. And as a vocal music educator, I am always looking for ways to keep Baroque music alive and to make sure that students and the next generation is getting excited about it. And those little details, those little choices make such a difference for a younger audience, and then they're able to see. So my belief is, you know, if you want to do a rock cover of Vivaldi, you know, someone's going to see it on YouTube and they're going to maybe want to take up violin. So it's important to bring things, as you said, into 2018.
The concert is a week from this Sunday. It's the Sunday after Thanksgiving, 3:00, November 25th. It's the Vox Valis Women's Ensemble. Jessie O'Hara, who's the manager and co-founder of Vox Valis, and Krista Fredrickson, who will be the vocal soloist, performing at the Good Samaritan Auditorium on Sunday. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.